Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. At around the time that Alice Cooper was ruling the airwaves with his song School's Out, he was also presiding over an upstairs room at a Sunset Strip club where a who's who of rock's biggest stars would go to hang out and drink and, well, mostly to drink. They called themselves the Hollywood Vampires. Jump ahead 40 years and Alice Cooper is once again leading the Hollywood Vampires, and it's still a who's who of rock glitterati. But this time, they're playing music, much of it by the original Vampires who are no longer with us. Alice Cooper and his friends, the actor-musician Johnny Depp and Aerosmith guitarist Joe Perry, put the band together, and both Alice Cooper and Joe Perry join me here in the Soundcheck Studios. Guys, welcome.
And we're sober.
For many years.
Yeah. It's so funny that we didn't really realize this, that almost everybody on the album at one time was not sober, but is now, and we're writing about the guys that died from drinking that we used to drink with. So there's an irony there that's so weird.
There are so many layers of irony. Yeah. First of all, Joe, were you a member of the Vampires?
No, we were, because we lived in Boston, we were kind of like off the, you know, kind of...
You were pretty far
off
from
the
Sunset
radar,
Strip.
You know,
they would have been. If they were in L.A., they would have been there every night.
I'm totally convinced that not only would Aerosmith not be a band if we had lived in L.A. then, you know, moved to L.A. after we made it, but I really wouldn't want to put money on the longevity of any of our lives, you know,
right.
At that point. I mean,
L.A. was designed to destroy bands. Yeah. Any young band that came to L.A., I said, you're done. I said, because if you don't really, really stay with it, this city will just divide you. The girls, the drugs, the party. Pretty soon, you haven't rehearsed in 2 weeks, and you forgot all about the band. You're just partying.
Yeah.
You know, that's it.
Well, how much music was happening in this upstairs room in this club?
It might have been the only place where it was a refuge from music.
Yeah.
Because that's all we did. You know, I mean, everybody there was touring all the time or making records, and I don't think anybody ever talked about music. It was might have been the place where we went to not talk about music.
And so who were kind of the core members of the group?
Harry Nilsson was there every night. Keith Moon, when he was in town, was there every night. Bernie Taupin and myself, Mickey Dolenz, John Lennon would be there a lot. We were the core of it, but anybody that was in town, somebody would say, hey, you know, I'm going to bring in this guy tonight and that guy. I said, okay, great, you know. But it was basically, I read somewhere there was a drinking club with Errol Flynn and John Barrymore and W.C. Fields and these guys, and they met every night and drank. And I said, well, why don't we do that with rock and roll? Let's make that a kind of a close circuit thing with us, because we drank every night anyways. We might as well be together, you know.
Better than drinking alone, as the song says. So was there hazing of the new guys when they came in?
Well, you know, everybody kind of looked at them and said, are they worth their weight in alcohol like we are? It was last man standing. Basically, we would sit around waiting to see what Keith Moon was going to wear. You know, was he going to be the Queen of England tonight, or was he going to be a French maid? Or was he going to be Hitler? Or was he going to be Zorro? Or what? You know, because he'd go and rent costumes and show up in full regalia. And we'd just sit there and go, wow.
Yeah.
You know, not only is this guy the most insane, but he's the best drummer in the business.
Right. But you what know? About, I mean, you're Alice Cooper. Were you there in makeup and snake boas?
No, I would sit there just cool as could be. Just, you know. It was when we didn't have to be those guys. And I think that was the relief of it, is that we didn't have to be the character that everybody wanted us to be on stage. It was the one time we could sit down and go, so, I heard you're having a fight with your wife, you know, or something, you know.
Yeah. So for a number of years now, you've been talking about an album of covers under the title My Dead Drunk Friends.
Well, I was going to do an album of covers, then I realized I needed a reason to do a covers album. I didn't want to just do a covers album. And I said, well, why don't we honor our dead drunk friends, the guys we drank with, you know, that are gone now? I mean, here we are. We're alive. We're still making records. And here's these guys that used to drink with Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix and all these people. And they're gone now. Mm-hmm. So let's honor them, you know, by doing their song, T-Rex. I mean, and then you think of the songs you can do.
Right.
You know, that, then we'd sit around Joe and, you know, and Johnny and I'd sit around and go, wow, how do you pick a song from Jimi Hendrix? You know, how do you pick a song from T-Rex?
No.
You just sat there and somebody would say, hey, Jeepster. Okay, that sounds good.
You're so sweet. You're so fine. I want you all and everything just to be mine. Cause you're my baby. Yeah, you're my girl.
Well, you know, one of the touching things about this is it's not just covers, that you and Johnny Depp and a couple of other members of the band wrote two original songs, which are really kind of tribute.
They really are. The one was basically about standing in the rainbow, and it's full of drunk ghosts, and there are all the guys that are there. You still feel they're still there, so let's toast them.
Is the rainbow still there?
And the plaque is still there. The roost of the vampires, and it's still there.
It's still there, and the tradition continues. When I left Aerosmith, every time I was in L.A., I would go to the Rainbow, and sure enough, there was a whole new generation of people there.
Lemmy's there every night.
And there was like everybody would be hanging around the bar. It still carries the cachet, the whole thing, you know. So,
I'm really glad they didn't tear it down and build a Starbucks in there or something, because it really has a lot of history. That place, a lot of history gone in there.
I guess the question is, how much of it do you remember?
Yeah, it's not a lot. You know, to be honest with you, it was a bit of a blur. Hmm. But we always, no matter where we went out that night, you go to dinner someplace, you go to a party someplace, you always ended up there. It was like, you know, Family Guy. It was like the clam, you know.
Well, you know, sociologists talk about this idea of the great place. And, you know, you have home is a great place, a place where, you know, where everybody knows your name. Like the Cheers. And then work is a great place. But most people need a third great place. And that's...
That was it. In New York, it was Max's Kansas City. Well, that's where all the... That's where we all... If we walked in there, I'd see these guys... I'd see Frank Zappa, David Bowie. Everybody was in the back room there. In L.A., it was the Rainbow.
Okay.
You know.
It was kind of a dual function place, you know. I mean, but yeah.
But you felt safe there. For some reason, you go in the back room there and you felt, okay, it's a clubhouse.
Yeah.
It's the clubhouse, you know.
It was your third great place. And it's memorialized in these two new songs on the album by the Hollywood Vampires. Let's hear the first, and this is a little bit of Raise the Dead.
Just buried there, are coming up for air. Cardiac, heart attack, painted black. You know they never did the reaper. Hey, you, a sudden quick demise, so the body dies, but the music stays alive. So let's raise the dead. You gotta scream it now. So
Hollywood Vampires with Raise the Dead, one of the two original songs on the new album by my guests Alice Cooper and Joe Perry, with Johnny Depp and friends including Dave Grohl and Paul McCartney and Slash and Joe Walsh. But that song, that's kind of a statement of intent.
Yeah.
You know, the lyrics, just like sprinkling allusions to other rock songs, and then the idea that, yeah, these guys have passed on, but the music hasn't.
Let's raise the dead. I mean, in other words, don't let this music die. You know, we're still living, and we still love that music. when we got to do songs like, you know, Break On Through, and Robbie Krieger's there, and he's playing the guitar on it, and he's playing it exactly like he did in 1965, and you go, wow. You know, that's really cool.
You know, the day destroys the night, the night divides the day. Trying to run, trying to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through to the other side.
And then, of course, some of the guitar players are not here anymore. So you know, it really is a tip of the hat to these guys, you know.
There's also, I mean, Raise the Dead is the first song on the record, but it's not the first thing on the record. There's a little kind of prologue, and this must have been one of the last things Christopher Lee ever recorded.
It was the last thing he did. It was the last thing he did.
Wow, that's brilliant. Man.
And it was, you know, he was in Dark Shadows when we did Dark Shadows, and he played one of the old fishermen there. And we called him up and we said, what's the chances of you reading Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, like just this one page? And it ends up with, children of the night, what music they make. And it was perfect.
Have you seen that awful den of hellish infamy? With the very moonlight alive with grisly shapes. And every speck of dust that whirls in the wind, a devouring monster in embryo. Listen to them, the children of the night. What music they make.
And there's a little thing that he says underneath it that never got on the record, that he says, I dread to think what Alice is going to do with this. I said, I want that for my phone thing, okay? Because it was Christopher Lee, you know. But,
that's amazing.
You know, just getting him on the album was really the coolest thing ever. Because
yeah.
He's one of those guys. We had Vincent Price on one of the albums. Now we got Christopher Lee. Couldn't get any better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And overseeing it all, Bob Ezrin,
yeah.
Who did all of your records back in the 70s
yeah.
and stuff. So, I mean, it really was like a gathering of the tribes, it seems.
Well, you know, you get a guy like Ezrin, and Ezrin pulls the best stuff out of you. When we did the McCartney song, totally live in the studio. I mean, everybody was live. You know, Johnny and Joe on guitar.
Right.
Abe on drums. I was over here on, you know, singing, and we had... you know, Bruce playing bass, Johnny's bass player, and then McCartney on piano. And we just started the song. We went, okay, let's go, you know. And we played it live about five times all the way through.
That was it.
And it just clicked.
After we ran it through, so we knew the arrangement. I mean, it could have been 40 years ago, the way we used to record.
Did Aerosmith do that sort of thing live in the studio? I always thought you guys really, you know, did a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of overdubbing.
No, I mean, we always recorded
live. Yeah, we
still
yeah.
record live
yeah.
in the studio. You know, use a little more separation.
Sure.
But yeah. we always record live in the studio.
It's when your band is that good,
right.
You don't have to do a lot of overdubbing. You know, and you get that, the feel of the band. Now, okay, yeah, it pushes a little here, pulls a little bit there, but if the feel is right, that's the take.
So how did you choose the? I mean, Paul McCartney is not one of the dearly departed, but the song you chose was one he had written for Badfinger.
Badfinger, and two of the guys hung themselves.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, which was a tragedy. But you know, it was whatever song he wanted to play.
So Sir Paul wanted to do "Come and Get It."
Yeah,
which
yeah.
actually does turn out to be a kind of appropriate for the.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if it's part of it, but John was a vampire. Ringo was a vampire. And I think...
Was Paul ever?
Paul was never there as a vampire. But every time I see him, he goes, am I still a vampire? You're a vampire. You know, so, he would, if he lived in L.A. at that time, he would have been.
Yeah.
I think he would have been. Because he liked being around musicians. he liked, especially Harry Nilsson. Harry was like, you know, him and John said that Harry was the best songwriter in America. So they were pretty tight. And I just think there might have been a little something there that was a tip of the hat to John.
It definitely worked. Every song on there has at least two or three layers of reason
for being
to be there.
Well, Paul McCartney may have been an honorary Hollywood vampire first go round, but now he's a member of the band on this song. This is the Hollywood Vampires version of "Come and Get It." Come and Get It, big hit for Badfinger in the early 70s, written for them by Paul McCartney and now recorded by the Hollywood Vampires, Alice Cooper and Joe Perry here with me on Soundcheck, Johnny Depp, and all the rest of the gang. And so, Joe, you're playing guitar, Johnny Depp's playing guitar. On School's Out, on Alice Cooper's song, there's a third guitarist, that's Slash. All of this sounds great, you know, all these great musicians in one place at one time, but I mean, you raise horses, you know, you can't have like two stallions in the same like place. How do you make enough room for these guitars?
There was none of that. It was really like everything fell together so naturally. Everybody's style, I didn't feel one
no never one a minute of ego
of, you know. Of ego stuff or anything like that, because we all had the same vision of what we wanted this to be.
And the funny thing with me is, it's, and this is true, I'm not just saying this because you're here, people always ask me, you know, guitar players, you know, and I said, if I could pick two, I pick Joe Perry and Slash. Because they don't noodle, they don't hammer, they play rock and roll guitar. And in the middle of the fretboard. And I love that. I love middle of the fretboard rock and roll. You know?
That's it.
I said, and you know,
I've never heard it put that way, but that is exactly it.
But that's it. You know, I said, who plays rock and roll? Aerosmith does. Slash's band does. The Conspirator or Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
I said, when you listen to the guitars, it's always that middle gutty guitar sound. And it's not way up here, and it's not way. It's right in the middle. And that's the gutsy sound. And I said, the only two guys that play like that are Joe and Slash, and both on the same song.
I mean, surviving anyway. I mean, there was a style there for a while in the 80s when all the pointy guitars, you know, and they were like, you know, like kind of like vying for attention with the singer and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've always, you know, again, learning from the masters. I mean, the guitars, I always follow the singer, you know, and it's like staying out of the way of the vocal and carrying, you know, like laying the bed down for the singer. I mean, it's really what people are listening to.
Well, and, who was the most economic guitar player of all time? George Harrison. He played exactly this many notes that were exactly the right notes and got out.
Right.
If you listen to the Yardbirds, Jeff Beck would play the melody line with the guitar and then get out. And you'd go, that was exactly right for that song, you know. And when it was time for him to rip, he'd rip. But I mean,
and he sure did.
But he just milked those notes so that you'd go, oh, come on, you know.
Well, you know, with School's Out, it has that, there's that iconic guitar riff, you know. And so how do you decide who's taking that riff, or do you pass it from one to another?
You know,
whoever started.
I'm not sure. I mean, it just kind of, it just, like I said, things just kind of fell together. It worked kind of the way it does with Aerosmith. Brad and I don't talk about who's going to play what. It's like we both have our different styles, and we just kind of
you
it
find
just
you
works.
You
kind of
know.
Out.
You
yeah. kind of
know.
Principles. There ain't got no innocence. We can't even think of a word to rhymes. School's out for summer. School's out forever. School's been closed.
You know how good Slash is. Slash knows how good you are. So it's like you look at each other and go,
right.
And then I'll do it, and then we'll be fine.
And yeah. Tommy, your guitar player, is a killer. I mean, he can play anything, and it was like...
That's Tommy Henriksen.
Yeah, Tommy Henriksen, who he was kind of, you know, it's like you have to have a Brian Jones in the band. You have to have a John Lennon who plays the rhythm.
Right.
Keeps that rhythm going. And it, hard to find a great rhythm player.
Yeah.
You know. It really is. It really is.
Well, one of the interesting things about what happens with School's Out is the way you guys then blend in another brick in the wall, the Pink Floyd song, which you blend in without ever actually leaving that School's Out riff.
They sit right, they just fold into each other. And we never really realized that. And then I realized that Bob produced both records.
He did The Wall by Pink Floyd. Yeah.
And I went, oh, wait a minute, that makes sense. And it was probably the same kid singing on School's Out as it was on The Wall. But when you play them two together, you go, they go like that. You never have to quit playing School's Out to sing The Wall.
Yeah. I mean, this, you know, talk about a surprise, you know, hearing a song that you've been familiar with forever and then suddenly hearing it a new way. Listen to what happens when School's Out meets Another Brick in the Wall.
We do it like that on stage. We do it like that on stage every night. We really do. We do School's Out, and all of a sudden, we don't need no education. You know, audience goes crazy for that. So,
well, now Joe was saying before that he's, you know, looking forward to getting on stage with Tommy and the rest of the band as the Hollywood Vampires move from the studio to the stage. Now, you guys have two shows at the Roxy.
Yeah.
September 16th and 17th, and then Rock in Rio, September 24th, down in Brazil.
We're going from two little club gigs to a gigantic festival.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most insane festivals in the world.
What, a million stone Brazilians?
I don't know if anybody's ever really gotten a count, you know? It's amazing.
Insane.
It's a really
but fun,
incredible
really fun.
Show. It's great.
So do you think there would be more opportunities for the Hollywood Vampires post Rio to continue playing live?
We're being very logical about this, saying that, you know, after we do three shows, I can't imagine that not being more shows.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
That's
all
right. That's as far as we can take it.
That's as far as I can take it.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, September 11th is the release date for the record from the Hollywood Vampires. And, you know, we were talking before about the original songs. The second of the two is Dead Drunk Friends, which was the title that was sort of being bandied about for your proposed covers album some years ago.
That's what I still call it.
And, you know... even that name, My Dead Drunk Friends, gets to kind of, there's the sense of playfulness, of fun, but also the irony behind it and this kind of sadness and loss. And I mean, you're walking a really fine emotional line.
If you would
here.
Have known these guys, they would have laughed their head off at that. They would say, that's the greatest idea. You know, none of these guys, they took themselves seriously on stage and musically. They all had a great sense of humor. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, all of them did. And I think that they would have totally, in fact, if there are ghosts on this planet, we'll see them. We're leaving the door wide open for these guys. But no, I know their sense of humor. This is exactly Harry Nilsson's sense of humor and exactly Keith Moon's sense of humor. You know, my dead drunk friends, he would have said, perfect. You know, that should be the name of the band.
Here's to all the women, the widows and the brides, the ones that we came home to, the ones we had to hide. The next was to the road boys and all the crap we tried. We thought we were immortal, but then you died. I've been feeling kind of lonely, so I came here to get fried. I'm raising my glass and tossing it back. Dead drunk.
We fight and we fight and we puke and we puke and we fight and we drink. We puke and we puke and we drink and we fight and we fight and we puke and we drink.
First time I heard it, I was like, it almost sounds like a mini opera, and as well as like a tribute, you know, because you picture it, because
yeah.
The lyrics are right there, and the way that the music.
It's, you know, here, this one goes out to the girls that
yeah,
that
right.
put up with us.
You got it,
this
man.
One goes out to the crew. This one goes out to the boys that, yeah, didn't quite make it, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
But we drink and we puke and we fight and we puke and we fight.
Yeah, I mean, there's no glamorizing the excess there in that last part.
It turned into a pirate drinking song, you know. But still, that had the sense of humor to it that it needed to have, because they were pirates. They were all pirates. You know, rock and roller is the closest thing to a pirate as you can imagine.
Hey, man,
you know?
none of us ever thought we were going to make it past.
Oh, my gosh.
Whatever.
He had a great little line today. He says, he never got into this business for the longevity of it. You know, I mean, nobody expected to get past 30, I don't think. You know, I never did.
I mean, I still can't believe it. But yeah, that's exactly it. I mean,
but that really speaks to the credibility of that style of music, that 16-year-olds still listen to it and go, oh, yeah. Yeah. There's 16-year-olds right now putting on Strange Days and going, what? That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. Somebody's putting on a Jimi Hendrix album and going, what? Who plays guitar like that?
Right.
You know, so there's young generations right now just discovering Sgt. Pepper. You know, I mean, how cool is that? Yeah. That music is there because it's that good.
I mean, this is how music has always worked, right? I mean, people keep coming back to the Great American Songbook because it's great.
Yeah, that's right. Cole Porter. I mean, his songs still stand up. Burt Bacharach's songs will still stand up.
Yeah.
You know, McCartney, Brian Wilson, you know, Paul Simon, a lot of those songs will, 100 years from now, still be, people will be singing them. You know?
Yeah. So do you guys kind of maybe feel a sense of responsibility that you're two of the ones who are still standing from this generation, so much of which is now gone?
Well, you know, I think Aerosmith is still Aerosmith because they still believe in Aerosmith. I'm Alice Cooper because I still believe in Alice Cooper. I still believe Alice is still my favorite rock star, the character, you know.
I think, we definitely believe in the legacy of what we've done to manage to still be alive,
mm-hmm.
and still be alive to create. It's because it is an art form that will last,
yeah.
And people will be listening to it in God knows how, you know, with whatever, like
Give
things
plants
plugged
or something
into their heads, but it'll still be there. And it's like
I have a theory that if you think you've written your best song, then you should quit. Because that, I still say the best song is still out there. Mm. You know, the best show is still out there.
Boy, I can relate to that.
Yeah. Man.
And look, if I have to wear hearing aids when I'm, if I make it to the next, you know, whatever, I'll wear the hearing aids.
Are you kidding? You know? We'll be touring over 90.
They make great ones, you know.
I keep saying, 90 years, I'm going to be singing, I'm 80, and I don't get, give me my walker, okay?
You know.
The Hollywood Vampires is the band. We've been speaking with Alice Cooper and Joe Perry, who, along with Johnny Depp, put the band together. Dave Grohl's on the record, Slash, Joe Walsh, Paul McCartney, tons of others. It's a great album. It's been great fun having the two of you here with us on Soundcheck today. I just got to ask, how much fun was it to play Jeepster?
Oh, yeah, that was great. Well, you know, we all were T-Rex fans.
I mean, this record is like a who's who of great songs, you know. I mean, this
and
is
that
this
groove is just so kind of, cool.
Yeah. It's almost the kind of record you would play someone to like break them into rock and roll.
Rock 101.
It is like a intro to classic rock. But this is just so much fun. So this is what we're going to end with. It's T-Rex's Jeepster from the Hollywood Vampires.
Just like a car you're pleasing to behold, I'll call you Jaguar if I may be so bold, 'cause you're my baby, 'cause you're my love. Girl, I'm just a Jeepster.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.